Looking forward to having this man in here for a long, long time. He has been part of some of the biggest sporting organisations in the country. Started as an outstanding footballer with the Norwood Footy Club over in Adelaide. Was with the Adelaide Crows, the Australian Olympic team, then Melbourne, Essendon, Carlton, and more recently, and only just got back from the World Cup campaign as an integral part of the England team. Fascinating, and can't wait to get stuck into it. Neil Craig, welcome.
Thanks, Gary. Good to be here. Good to be back home in Melbourne.
So. You've been away for a while.
Yeah, I've been away for, nearly 5 months, I guess. So, you know, from the start of the program till the end of the World Cup. So,
how did it come about? How did you find yourself right at the forefront of one of the great world sporting events?
It was probably my contact with Eddie Jones back in early 2000s when he was coach of the Wallabies. I had a bit to do with him then, sort of mainly through my sports science background that we got in contact then. And we've just... you know, we've just sort of kept in contact over the years. He came to the Adelaide Crows at one stage just to have a look at what we're doing there. So it was a sort of a casual relationship, Gary, but then just out of the blue, about 2.5 years ago, he just said, would you come over and be part of it? So for a whole range of reasons, the timing was right for me. Even though I was at Carlton at the time, and it was a tough decision to leave Carlton and Brendan Bolton in particular, but the timing was right. And it's been one of the greatest experiences of my life in terms of, well, just to experience it, but also the professional development and what you get exposed to, you know, at that level.
Neil, what was your role specifically?
I had a variety of roles, Tim. You know, and like most of these jobs, it tends to evolve when you get there. But initially it was just to be a right-hand man with Eddie.
Right.
Once again, I guess having been a senior coach myself, you have an empathy for what they go through. So, you know, to be a critical friend, to bounce ideas off, to, you know, at times it's a lonely place when you're in charge of the place, like Eddie is. So there was that aspect of the relationship. I spent a lot of time working with their leadership group, which I really enjoyed, which is an interesting exercise in itself. Did a little bit of hands-on coaching with they call it the high ball.
Right.
And that's becoming more and more predominant in the game. So I enjoyed doing some hands-on coaching again. And I guess from my sports science background, just, you know, you're working with the whole staff just in terms of collaboration with coaches. And the final one was, you know, working closely with the coaches in their development, mentoring, because in the end the coaches have the biggest influence on the playing group. So... you know, if it's your playing group will never be any better than the coaching group.
So how is somebody like Eddie Jones accepted by the English people, given obviously he's an Australian, he's coached the Wallabies? Mm. Is that like walking into enemy territory for him?
If you're winning, it's not.
No. So that's the difference.
Yeah, it's Eddie, the English coach. If you're losing, it's Eddie, the Australian coach, coaching England. And I understand all that. And that's but one thing you do know about, which I didn't appreciate, Tim, but once you're over there, like it's an international sport, and the diversity in nationalities and where people coach and they move around the world, you know, playing and coaching, so it tends to be well accepted. You know.
Is it the Australian sporting reputation that transfers itself really well? I mean, the English cricket team's had an Australian coach for the last however many years.
Yeah, that's been going on for a long time, Gary. I mean, Australia's got a fantastic reputation in terms of what they've been able to achieve in a whole range of sports on the international stage with the population we've got.
Mm.
So, I mean, you go to England and it's unbelievably well-resourced. You know, there's not too much we go without over the journey, whereas in Australia it's a bit limited to a certain extent. So then it gets back to quality of people, quality of coaching, the programs that you run. And so Australian, in terms of coaching, sports science, have got a fantastic reputation overseas.
Well, Neil, you've coached in your own right in AFL football and successfully with the Adelaide Crows. So you've been around coaches you're coaching yourself. You've been around other coaches, you know, Blighty and Bolton and at Essendon during that period of time as well. How would you compare the anxiety or the pressures that are applied to or around an AFL coach by comparison to what you saw with Eddie Jones and coaching a nation?
Yeah. It's just the whole thing just steps up, Tim. It's, you know, in terms of the number of people that follow the game, the financial resource and, of course, the pressures that you've alluded to, because it's nation versus nation.
Mm.
It's not Essendon versus Carlton. I mean, that's big in Melbourne, and it is big, and the pressure's there, and it's a great rivalry. But then the next level, it's England versus New Zealand. It's England versus Wales. It's England versus South Africa. So everything steps up. The scrutiny from the media steps up. The expectations on the playing group steps up. So and that's the thing you feel really quickly when you get there, is just the intensity of international level sport.
Is there a lot of love for the English?
There's a lot of hate for the English. we were talking off air before we came in. I don't. Every time we played, it seemed like we were playing a team that hated the English. You know, whether it be Wales, whether it be Scotland.
They've got some enemies out there.
Oh yeah, well, they must have been very bad people back in the old days.
They've got history.
But I think that like the national anthem of Scotland is about a famous battle between the English and the Scots. So it's passionate,
more than sport.
Yeah, it's got deep roots back into the history. But that's one of the exciting things about it. Like it's intense, which I really enjoyed. It's attention to detail every day. It's on.
Were you behind the reaction, the English reaction when the haka was performed by the All Blacks? Yeah. What was the planning that went into that?
Just to do something different.
So can you explain for those that aren't aware of what happened?
Yeah, what did the English do?
Well, normally with the haka, the opposition side tends to line up facing them. There's a certain distance that you're allowed to be.
Yep. Is that 20 metres? Is that right?
Something like that. So in our discussions going into the game, and one of Eddie's great strengths is not surprises, because he's not into surprises, but to do something different. And there was a lot of discussion about the way the England team would line up and the formation of that without being disrespectful. And there was, once again, we didn't want to be disrespectful, but we didn't want to just stand there and cop the haka, which is sort of an unaccepted way to do it. So we just came up with something slightly different. I think it had a significant impact. I was watching Kieran Reid at the time, and I know when the English players went into the V formation or the horseshoe formation, you could see the look on his face that this is a bit different. You know, what's going on here? And at that level of competition, Tim and Gary, sometimes it's just the little half percenters. Mm. You know, that can make a difference. Yeah. So,
and you really thought it threw them off?
I thought, well, who knows? Because you never know. But the way England started in that game, we were very dominant, set the tone of the game.
Yeah, they looked nervous, didn't they?
They looked on the back foot to a certain extent. But once again, you know, when you're New Zealand, like every time you play, you're expected to win.
Mm.
You know, so they have that huge expectation.
So you've seen that, you've experienced it. So you've been over there for 5 months, you're in Japan for eight weeks, did you say?
Yeah, 8 or 9 weeks.
I'm not sure what your movements were, I'll ask you in a moment, but coming back here now, what do you learn and what's transferable that you'd take back from that experience? Let's just say you came back to AFL football, because that's sort of our wheelhouse. What are the one or two or three things that you'd take back and say, this is what I've learned and this is what we need to embrace?
Yeah, it's from a... One of the great things about the involvement was the professional development that you get exposed to. For example, Gary, I was able to spend a whole day with Alex Ferguson.
Mm.
Like he came into the program, so he had lunch with us. He sat down, spoke to the coaches. Then another day we get to spend time with Roy Keane from a leadership point of view. So you get exposed to, because of the nature of the program and because of the location in Europe, you have access to all these unbelievable resources that come through. So,
what can you learn in a day from Sir Alex Ferguson?
Well, for example, what I learned from Alex Ferguson is, and it's something really basic and it's really simple, Tim, and you'd say, well, that's surely a bit more than that. But over the time, I mean, just his capacity to, he would say, just to include everyone in the club. So everyone's on a journey, but to make people feel valued, where they fit into the vision of the football club or the soccer club, And so when they come to work, they've got energy and enthusiasm. Now, that takes a lot of time for the head coach to do that. But he would, I'm sure if he was sitting in the studio now, that would be one thing that he would say. But you pick up a whole range of things. I mean, we have learning experts come through the place. You have different aspects of sports science, coaching methodology, development of coaches. It's basically world's best practice that you get exposed to. And so the whole bar goes up.
Where would it sit? So if we were to apply, if someone said, what is the coaching landscape in AFL footy right now? What's been successful? We'd say, well, it's about empathy. It's about Richmond have embraced this vulnerability, being able to be vulnerable with your teammates and show empathy and not be afraid to, you know, to have that side of it, which was often, you know, not so long ago frowned upon and would have been frowned upon as a weakness. Yep. Where does that sit in terms of
That's big, Gary. That's in the end, it's about relationships and to know your players really well. And that's probably where sport's going, is for coaches now to be basically behavioural psychologists or behavioural scientists. You've really got to know your players really, really well. The only way you can do that is to form a professional relationship with them. The only way you can perform a professional relationship is to spend time with them and talk to them. It's not texting, it's not emails, it's face-to-face conversation. And that will never go away. And the other aspect of, I think, where elite sport's going is this performance mindset, if you like, the way players think. And it can be, how do you handle expectation? It can be, how do you handle disappointment? And I think we assume too much in elite sport at the moment, particularly in Australia, that if the person needs some strength work, we put him in a gym and that's acceptable, or conditioning or skill work. But if they need to work on their mental skills, there's something wrong with them.
Right.
You know, and as a throwaway line, oh, he's a bit weak or a bit, you know, a bit timid or whatever. Where elite sport's going is that's a skill, the way people think. You can change the way people think, and that's the skill of the coach, and that's where the next big inroads are.
So if you had to, the brand new club, West Heidelberg, came into the AFL and said, "Righto, Neil, put this coaching structure in place. What's it look like?"
At the highest level?
Yep. This is a brand new AFL team, and you're in charge of saying, this is the head coach, this is this, this is that, this is that. What's that look like?
Yeah, I'd want diversity in the coaching group, real diversity.
In terms of?
The backgrounds they come from, the experience they've got, the way they think. You've got to be really careful in elite sport of what we call groupthink. You know, any head coach worth his salt doesn't want groupthink. He wants to be challenged, which means the head coach needs to be really comfortable in his own skin.
Where does that fit for a young coach then?
Yeah, it's difficult. It's really difficult, Gary, and I think that's one of the negatives of a young coach coming in. And so the people you put around him is hugely important. I mean, Eddie Jones, and the more I see it, Eddie Jones wanted experienced people around him to challenge him. So you actually end up with the best result and the best thought process. Now he's comfortable in his own skin. A young coach may not be like that. You see, so doesn't mean it can't work. But what I do know, if I ever had my time again, is I would have someone around me. Right. Who can just offer a different opinion, challenge you at certain times, have an empathy for what you go through. So there's that aspect of it, diversity of the coaching. I would certainly have an ex-senior coach on the panel, and I'd probably quality of support system around in terms of the sports science, the conditioning, but this performance mindset, once again, would be the area that I would start to look at.
The experience itself, Neil, of being part of the English team, what is that? Is that motivated you to want to go and do something else in AFL or in sport? You're enthusiastic, obviously. You're a very motivated person still. Mm. What is it that you would like to go and do now?
Well, I mean, what it's been able to do for me, Tim, is it's refreshed my thinking. And that's the other commonality, if you like, or the common trait with all the best coaches that I experienced over there, is their capacity to keep things fresh, to don't be afraid to break the mold, even though, you know, what you're doing might be successful. Is there a better way of doing it? What's the next new idea? Where do we take the program? So that's been a really refreshing aspect of the professional development for me, is that type of thinking. The other thing it's done is just reaffirm that I love working with the sport at that level.
Yeah.
And every level of sport's important. But my passion to work at that at the level, I mean, this is international level sport. I mean, can you imagine what AFL would look like if it was played worldwide? It would just be unbelievable.
Extraordinary.
It would just be unbelievable. And that's sort of what hit me when I went into the rugby world, that this is a worldwide sport, and the quality of player and the execution of play and where the sport's going, it just sort of sits you back and says, wow, this is how good would this be if you can take some of this back to, for example, to the AFL in Australia. I don't know where what's next for me. What I do know is I've still got the energy and the passion. And
have you had we keep hearing that you've been approached to become part of AFL programs. Is that the case?
No, I've had one conversation with the Gold Coast Suns, but that was more of a generic conversation about this concept of support, you know, around the coaching department. Just my thoughts on that. It wasn't necessarily about me doing that. It
right.
was more about what do you think about it? What have you seen overseas? How does it work? What stops it from working? That type of conversation.
You mentioned earlier that you were working at Carlton at the time with Brendan Bolton. Were you surprised by what happened with Brendan Bolton?
Yeah, I wasn't here at the time.
I understand that. Yeah.
So I was overseas, so I was sort of, internet and so forth. So I was surprised because I rate Brendan really highly. He's a young coach, but in terms of experience or being a young coach coming into it, he's the best young coach I've ever seen.
Did he like being challenged? You talked about that before, about having that coaching panel and the way that it needs to operate. Did he accept that or did he encourage that? Did he have the diversity in his coaching, coaches?
Well, the two things about Brendan, Tim, was one, before I went to Carlton, there was a lot of conversation between Brendan and myself about, does he really want this? And that's the first thing, is the coach has got to want it. Because it's no good the coach saying yes, but deep down saying no, because they end in tears.
Want you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, not necessarily me as a person, but that type of that, person.
Around
yeah,
you, yeah.
Yeah. So Brendan was really clear on that, and I was clear that that's what he wanted. And so part of that relationship then becomes, well, there is the challenge at certain times, the discussion, the walk around, you know, the walk around Prince's Park. It can be a whole range of discussions, but it's just... as I said, I think it's a really important role now. And the best coaches in the world have those people around them.
Little Birdie tells us that Nathan Buckley was over there in Japan and wanted in too. So I'm not sure how close your relationship is with Bucks. Maybe close, maybe not. But he experienced what you were experiencing for a short time.
Yeah, so we had a lot of AFL players come through the program, Gary. But at the World Cup, Nathan was there. Beforehand... Robert Harvey came over with the skill acquisition, a guy from Collingwood as well, Jamie.
Into the English setup?
Program, yep. Yeah. And one of the great things about Eddie Jones is that he opens up the program because he's not insecure about it. And he knows there's no secrets, in actual fact. But if you went there tomorrow, you'd spend most of the time answering his questions.
Right.
He'd have questions of you or you, Tim.
That's a great sign, isn't it? Always,
it's unbelievable.
People prepare to ask questions as opposed to speak at you.
Yeah, yeah. So Chris Fagan came over at one stage. Simon Goodwin came over at one stage. The Western Bulldogs came over at one stage. Canberra Raiders came over for the World Cup, and Nathan came over for the World Cup as well. And he only spent sort of a day and a bit there.
Yep.
But you probably should talk to Nathan about his impressions.
Yeah.
But once again, the key thing there was when I mentioned that, Eddie said, yeah, love to get him in and make sure we've got some time. So he said, I can ask him some questions about what they do in AFL and the way they go about it. So, and that's one of the great learning aspects of the program.
Talking to Neil Craig, you're close to Eddie Jones, obviously, and I've been reading about Eddie in the last 24 hours about the idea that Ricky Stewart spoke about this, that he would like to actually come back to Australia, but not coach rugby, doesn't want to coach the Wallabies. Mm. Now, you'd know the answer to this question, but he would like to coach in the NRL. Is that correct?
Maybe. He also would like to coach the EPL. He said he'd only last about 3 months, but he reckoned he'd give it a real go. And that's one of the real great strengths of your elite coaches, Tim.
Yeah.
Is that they have this unbelievable curiosity and their capacity to apply it and join the dots for their sport or to another sport is the way they think. It's just the way they think. And so, once again, over the journey, you learn that the best coaches in the world are secure in their own skin and are curious. For example, last January, Eddie brought his one of his assistant coaches out and his strength and conditioning coach out, and we spent a whole week here in Melbourne. I remember spending a great day down at St Kilda. There was they flew Rick Charlesworth over, and we had Charlie Walsh there all on the one day, and we spent a whole day with Rick Charlesworth and Eddie Jones. And that was about just questioning about how can we do it better? This is what we do. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Great having Neil Craig with us. We've only got him for a minute or two further. But just the mental health situation that we're dealing with, not in society, which infiltrates sport.
Yep.
So Nick Maddison on the verge of Australian test selection, perhaps Glenn Maxwell in the Australian team. Will Pekoski's had to pull out of Australian team. These are the cricketers. We've had Dane Beams, Tom Boyd, a whole host of AFL players. Is it as prevalent in the environment that you've just come from?
Yeah,
and what can we do about it?
Well, first of all, they're human.
Yeah.
And often at the level we're talking about, there's often this perception that they're not human, that they're bulletproof about everything, and they're not. And that goes for coaches as well. And that's where your relationships in the organisation become really important, Gary, so that you can, if you know your player, for example, really well, you'll pick up on that.
Yeah, so Justin Langer is said to be the one that went to Glenn Maxwell and said, are you okay? You don't quite seem right.
So he would, his intuition would, because he knows him really well, he says something not quite right here. And then the relationship, the strong relationship is, then there's this trust. So like a trusting relationship, if I asked him how he's going, if he really trusts me and he's not going that well, he'll say, I'm not going that well. But if he doesn't trust me, he'll say, I'm going pretty well, even though he may not be. So it's that level of trust that you need to be able to develop, and that's when you've got a really healthy environment. To think that's not going to happen in your environment is naive, particularly at the high-level sport because of the additional pressures that those and the exposure that the players and the coaches and support staff face. I mean, they get critiqued every day.
That's why the face-to-face is critical. You said earlier, no text, no email, face-to-face.
Yeah. I mean, the text and email are part of communication, and the younger generation, you know, all they know is a mobile phone. So it's I'm not saying you don't use it there, Gary, but the quality of the relationship is the conversation. It's face-to-face.
Just one final question from me, because this has been coming through on the text, the speckled text, while you've been talking. A couple of English fans out there, they want to know what happened in the final against South Africa? Why did England fail in that final against South Africa?
I wish I could answer it. It's like most things in life. A few things. In discussion about breaking confidentiality, is that England played Australia, big game, played New Zealand, huge game, and we probably felt like we just lost a bit of steam going into the South African game. That's not an excuse, but we might do things differently if we had our time again to try and alleviate that. In terms of the actual game, the scrum, we got a real touch-up in that area, which is highly unusual for England to get a touch-up. I'm talking, that's but like in AFL terms, that would be losing the contested ball by 40. Like you just can't get in the game. And so South Africa in particular were fantastic there. And probably the other thing, Tim, which once again I know Eddie's keen to do a lot of work on, is the expectation of performance. England historically don't like to be the favourites, and we were clearly the favourites going into that final. But the bottom line is the better you get, and the English team, I have no doubt, will be a power for a lot of years going forward. They will be the favourites going into a lot of games, and so the capacity to embrace that and still perform on the day. Once again, that's a way you think about things. And that's why I keep going back to that performance mindset, the way you think.
Can I just ask you one final question?
You've got a lot of final questions.
I know, one final question. Eddie Jones, when he was coaching against the Wallabies, did you notice any change in his demeanour because he was coaching against his own nation?
No, I didn't. He's a highly experienced coach. It's his fourth World Cup.
Yeah.
One of his great strengths in this World Cup in Japan was his equilibrium, the way he's thinking, calmness, making sure that the coaches didn't overcoach, not getting too emotional about the opponents, as in like the Wallabies. I'm sure there's some emotion there, Tim, because that was a tough period of his life, and he talks about that. And the way he handled when he left the Wallabies and lost that World Cup final against England in Australia versus the way he's handling it now. So, but once again, he understands that the team becomes a reflection of your head coach. And so if he's emotional and he's up and down, the team will often mirror that. So the role of the head coach is absolutely crucial in the way he or she conducts their business.
Hey, it's so good to talk to you. If the Gold Coast Suns haven't been on the phone, then they should be. That's just my humble opinion. We hope to keep the lines of communication open. We love talking to you, Neil. It's been fantastic. Thanks for coming this morning.
Thanks for the invite, Gary. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Neil.
Hey, Jesse Clark is a young man who we've been doing this over the past couple of weeks ahead of the draft, which is upcoming in the next couple of weeks, the most important day in their sporting lives, of course, to find out whether or not their dreams will be fulfilled, and if so, where they'll be fulfilled. And Jesse Clark, as the captain of the Geelong Falcons, is going to be in that draft. I'm pretty sure of that, and he's been good enough to join us. G'day, Jesse.
G'day, Gary. G'day, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, appreciate good to it. Talk to you, young man. Co-captain the Falcons this year. You won the best and fairest. It was a bit of a struggle. They didn't have the greatest of year, the Falcons.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it was a bit of an up and down year, and we sort of struggled to find consistency throughout it, and we had a few injuries that unfortunately didn't go away, but I think all the boys were able to form some relationships and still really enjoyed the season and got a lot out of it. So, no, it was still successful in that aspect, I think.
How do you handle that then as a young captain? Test, you've got a side that's not quite going as well as perhaps what you would have hoped. You've got the challenges of having the private school boys coming back and forward. How do you handle that as captain?
Yeah, I think being in a program like the Falcons, it's best to use the resources you've got. So I think I looked to the head coach a lot throughout the season and the assistant coaches for help, and also being part of a leadership group, I had Cooper Stevens as my co-captain, so I sort of looked to feed off him a bit and get help off him. I think just surrounding myself with other teammates and coaches that could help out was really positive for me this season, and it sort of helped to keep my spirits up throughout the season.
Hey, Jesse, throughout the season, you've had a few clubs that have come and met with you and your parents, and you've sat and you've chatted with them. What did you learn from them, the recruiters and these people that, you know, wanted to sit down and talk to you?
Yeah, I think in those scenarios, you can get pretty excited and pretty nervous about it, but I think it's best to just be yourself. If you're going to try to make things up or act a bit different, you're never going to go very far. So I think it's if you stick true to yourself and I think that's the best thing to do in those situations. And also, I think that a lot of the time they're coming down to your house to sort of meet your family and sort of get a look into the environment that you've grown up in and that you're a part of. So, I really enjoyed those situations. And, it was really good.
How would you describe the environment that you've grown up in?
Definitely a pretty busy one. I mean, I'm one of six kids. So, I've got the three younger brothers and then an older sister and a younger sister, we all get along really well, and Mum and Dad do a really good job of keeping an eye on us and looking after us. So, pretty busy environment I've grown up in, but it's been really enjoyable.
And the competitive environment as well? You said you had three brothers, is that right?
Yeah, so it's a lot of time spent in the backyard playing backyard cricket and footy when we're a bit younger. A lot of that going on. So it was always me and the youngest ones versus the two middle ones. So the matches would get a bit fiery out in the backyard, but it was all in good fun. And Mum would make sure she comes out before anything got out of control. So, it was all good.
What sort of player, if a club takes you or when a club takes you in the draft, what sort of player are they getting?
I'm more of a half-back sort of player, so I like to play that third tall role. That can play on the bigger players or even the smaller forwards. So I enjoy being able to do that. And then I look to sort of intercept and rebound when I can. And then I sort of pride myself a bit on my leadership as well. So I think that's what they look forward to getting.
Are you getting any inkling, perhaps? As Tim said, you've spoken to a number of clubs. Is there any one that you think you may have targeted yourself or put just penciled in as hopefully getting there?
Not really, I don't think. It's all a bit up in the air, I think, and you sort of have those thoughts about it and whatnot, but I think in my position in the draft, I'll probably be towards middle to late, so it's sort of a range of different clubs which potentially I could be picked up by, so yeah, I haven't really got too much of an idea at the moment, so it's more just a bit of a waiting game at the moment and hoping for the best.
Hey, Jesse, you get drafted. What do you think you need to start working on more as an AFL player to prepare yourself for AFL footy once you get to that AFL club? Is it endurance, speed? You know, what are the things that you think you just got a little bit of a gap in currently?
I think the biggest thing would probably be my speed and agility. It's something that probably doesn't come very naturally to me, but I've looked to work on it this year and I've improved on it a bit, but it's definitely something that I could still continue to improve in, especially with the games now played at a pretty fast pace. You got to always be on your toes sort of thing. So, yeah, if I was lucky enough to land at a club, that'd definitely be something that I'd spend a bit of time on, I think.
And what is it that it makes you most nervous about it? When you sit there and you're lying in bed at night and you're thinking, geez, I'm going to end up at such and such, what is it that gives you a few butterflies the most?
Yeah, I think just because it's such a great opportunity. In the environment I sort of grew up in, playing AFL, that was sort of the ultimate goal. And a lot of kids sort of have those dreams growing up. So if to be lucky enough to end up having that career, it's something that definitely gives me butterflies in the stomach. And as I said, it's something that I've dreamed of ever since I can remember. So, and all that hard work you sort of put into it, and it makes you pretty pumped up about it, but definitely makes you pretty nervous in the lead up to it.
Hey, Jesse, I know you've heard about the Lombardi question. It's the one that Gary asks every time we speak to young players that are heading towards the draft. So I'm going to hand you over to Gary now for the Lombardi question. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
What's your favourite memory from your junior playing days, Jesse? From the time you started right up until you finished with the Geelong Falcons, what's your favourite footballing memory?
I'd have to go an under-16s club footy flag. So for St Joseph's down in Geelong, we won a grand final in under-16s, and I really enjoyed that day, looking back on it.
You've passed with flying colours. I don't know what we're going to do if ever one of these young fellas doesn't pass. It's going to be a worry, but you've passed
good answer.
With flying colours. A great answer. Hey, you've spoken really well, mate. So congratulations. We've got all of our boys. We call them our boys once we've spoken to them, and we'll watch with great interest how it unfolds for you. Good luck.
Cheers. Appreciate it. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Tim.